What does it sound like to be questioned before you have even spoken? To move through everyday spaces, a border crossing, a grocery store, a classroom, an airport, and feel each time that you're being measured against something you didn't define. The stories you're about to hear were created by young people across New Brunswick. They are students, immigrants, children of immigrants. Some have lived here all their lives, others arrived more recently, carrying entire histories in their accents, their names, their silence. What connects them is not one shared experience, but a shared act of expression, of talking what is often unspoken and giving it sound. This is Soundscape of Resistance, and I'm your host, Jigme Damol, and these are their stories. Megumi Ozawa is a psychology student at University of New Brunswick. She grew up in Wentworth, Nova Scotia. Her soundscape looks back on childhood in a multiracial family and the repeated experience of being stopped at the border because her father is Japanese. What might have been routine travel becomes something entirely different. A pattern of questioning, delay, and being made to explain belonging.
I remember as a young child, I would often travel back and forth to the United States with my family for ski trips. My dad often driving, mom in the front seat, and my brother and I in the back. We were happily driving along until my mom turned around and said, "We are getting close to the border, so both of you behave." My brother and I sat quietly in the back as we idled closer to this border security booth. My dad, who was born and raised in Japan, is a visible minority. As he rolled his window down, I remember the officer asking the purpose of our visit into the United States. As I was sitting quietly and being on my best behavior, I witnessed my dad and family be discriminated against for our skin color. The officer asked us to enter the main building to ask us more questions. We were just a normal family passing through to go on a trip. We opened our doors and walked inside the security office, waiting to hear additional steps we needed to take. My brother and I sat in the waiting chairs and made ourselves as small as possible, not to draw additional attention onto ourselves. The time ticked on and on. For hours, we sat and listened to my dad get interrogated for the purpose of our trip. The red cover of his Japanese passport stood out against the navy blue cover of the rest of our Canadian passports. After hours of sitting and waiting, they cleared us. They finally decided that my family was going to do no harm. We could have told them that in less than 1 minute. We climbed back into the car, started the engine, and drove off. The air in the car was heavy.
Oluwani Femi Bube Adilaja is a Nigerian student from University of New Brunswick with a degree in criminology and criminal justice, focused on law, social justice, and community advocacy. Her work explores the quiet and loud moments of navigating identity as a racialized immigrant.
If campus solidarity were a drink, what would it be and why?
I would say water.
I would say water.
Coffee. A hot chocolate.
Coke.
Fruit punch.
Tropical, like, daiquiri situation.
What does campus safety mean to you, and do you feel safe here?
Campus safety isn't just about the physical security, but also like being able to be emotionally supported.
Do I feel safe here? Sometimes.
I've kind of felt unsafe while walking on the campus, like when it was dark.
Have you ever felt unsafe in your academic setting?
I mean, not really, unless you count, like, sometimes when a professor may say something a little unprofessional, but...
I have. A few times where suspicious men would hit on me and one couldn't take no for an answer.
I would say no. I think I've always felt very safe here.
What does respect look like in either personal slash professional relationships?
Well, respect to me looks like honoring my boundaries, like my no is my no, my yes is my yes.
Setting boundaries and making sure everyone like doesn't overstep their boundaries.
How do we change the culture of silence around issues like sex for greed?
Creating an environment where people feel safe to report, a safe reporting system, by advocating, by speaking up about these issues.
Creating a safe space for people to have like open conversation about it.
Well, I think women in like UMB, we should have more focus groups. I think all of us should come together and like be talking like way more than we do.
But the way that we get around this is by talking about it, making it known that there are power imbalances in both professional and personal lives.
As women, how can we look out for each other and express solidarity?
By regularly checking up on our fellow women, yeah.
We as women shouldn't tear each other apart, and that we should also look out for one another.
Probably protecting ourselves like in vulnerable situations, and girls are like stained from like their period and all that, you know, just being able to help them out.
We should not victim blame or like blame the woman. Oh, what was she wearing that she experienced this? So
I guess remembering that if it could happen to me, it could happen to you too.
If you were a campus safety animal, what animal would you be?
Bird.
An owl.
I'll probably say I'll be an eagle, just so I can see everyone from above.
I will be a cat.
I would be a bear.
And why?
Because bears are scary and cuddly at the same time.
A sloth.
Yeah, why? I feel like I sleep all the time.
See, that case, right? I'll be a dog. Like, I mean, because like, I want to protect them. I'll back, like, if I see a woman being attacked, I will start backing.
I think because my first pet was a dog, and like, dogs are really loyal animals.
I think probably just a dog. I think everyone loves a little dog and they're just so friendly, and I just love snuggling up with my dog and I always feel safe with him, so.
That you're not alone, you're seen, and you shouldn't feel bad for whatever situations you've been put through.
There are also lots of resources on campus, as well as in the Fredericton area. But it's important to talk about it because you're not alone, and it is about communication.
Hala Zain Alabedin is a psychology student with an interest in language, history, and artistic expression from Mount Allison University. Her soundscape begins with something often framed as an advantage, being bilingual, but the story quickly unsettles that idea. It draws from her mother's experience of language-based discrimination, where speech itself becomes a barrier, and where years of working, building a business were shaped by how others heard her voice.
On a Monday morning, going to the restaurant that I have always dreamed of with my son after a shopping spree for the restaurant that needed stuff for the next day opening. After arriving, I stopped the car on a loading zone that I see everyone stopping at to load their stuff for their businesses, as the surrounding area was full of businesses. As well as my neighbor, my business neighbor, stopped in front of me with his white car. On that day, I had inspection from the fire department to check on the restaurant. Seconds later, I saw a parking ticket person checking the cars, who has paid their ticket, who hasn't. I thought I was in the safe zone because so many people and so many businesses stop here to load their stuff for a few minutes or a few seconds. A minute later, I saw the parking ticket person approaching me. He came and told me that you cannot park here. I tried to tell him that I know, but I'm not parking. I'm only loading because it's a loading zone, as it says under the parking, and I see all my neighbors doing that, and my neighbor in front of me doing the exact same thing. He started talking angrily, and he said, "No, you must remove the car." I tried explaining, but he kept saying no.
No!
And he said that I cannot understand you. I tried explaining in a different language, which is French, but he kept saying no, and he kept saying that he doesn't understand me. Later on, my son came and tried to explain the situation. He told my son, when she learns English, she can come and talk to me then. And then he went on, giving me a $100 ticket, and went to say nothing to my neighbor, who was doing the exact same thing as we were doing, loading stuff from the car to the restaurant. I was in a complete shock, and I started crying, and told my son that we're closing today, we're not opening, and we're going home. A few hours after arriving home, my son told me that, "Mom, you need to check Twitter." I looked on Twitter, and one of my neighbors, that is very close, saw the whole interaction, and she posted it on Twitter. I was really appreciative of my neighbor posting about it, because they were thinking the same thing, that it wasn't right what he did and what he said. Surely enough, the comments were flooded with racist comments, with supporting comments, and it was all of a mix. On the next day, I received calls from reporters from different journals and different TV news, wanted to talk to me and ask me what has happened. I surely enough told them all about it. But later on the same day, I got a call while I was in the restaurant with my daughter. The call was, "Go back to your country if you don't respect the rules here." It was another shock, and it was another cry with my daughter. After that, a person arrived at the restaurant, which was Saint John parking manager, actually. He came in to apologize for what has happened, and he assured us that the person will get fired. But I didn't want that. I didn't want anyone to get fired. I want them to understand that accepting others is important. I knew that that person who talked to me like that was supporting another family, because who doesn't? And I didn't want him to get fired. I want him to learn and respect others. After that, we saw on Facebook that the mayor of St. John has talked about it. And he said that this is not right, and things should not be like this, and racism is not correct, and they will support our restaurant, and they will support what we have been through. But surely enough, a few days later, no one really cared. And no one showed support, but a few people who were very close to us, and we really appreciate them. But overall, we still got calls, threats, and racist calls telling us to go back to our own country and not stay here.
Kevinique Stubbs is from Bahamas and currently is living in Sackville, New Brunswick. Kevinique's soundscape begins in an ordinary place, a grocery store. A routine exchange becomes a prolonged interaction involving questioning, verification, and security footage, all over a small price difference. What unfolds is not just an inconvenience, but an exhausting experience of having credibility repeatedly tested in everyday life.
I've been doing this water exchange at this grocery store for a while now. I have a 16-liter bottle, and whenever it's empty, I gotta get a new one. The first few times I went, I tried to go to the counter first just to tell them, but the cashiers will always just tell me, "No, just go straight and swap the bottle yourself and then come back." So that's exactly what I started doing. It seemed like the standard routine. One day, I went with my white partner to do the exchange. Following what the other cashiers had told me to do several times before, I went straight to the water rack, swapped my empty bottle for a full one, and headed to the line to pay. When I got to the front, the guy behind the counter asked, "Is this a refill?" I said, "Yes." But instead of just ringing it up for the $6 refill price, he stopped everything. He looked at me and said, "But you didn't come to me first. How would I know that?" I tried to explain. I told him I've done this plenty of times before, and that the other cashiers always told me to just go get the water myself. I wasn't trying to skip a step. I was literally doing what I was told to do. But he didn't care. He made me step out of the line, right in front of everyone, and told another staff member about it. My boyfriend was standing right there with me the whole time, but the employee was only focused on me and my mistake. They made me wait for almost 30 minutes. Think about it, 30 minutes of my life standing there like I've done something wrong while they went to the back to check the security cameras, all over a $10 price difference between a new bottle and a refill. They eventually saw on the cameras that I was telling the truth and let me pay the $6. But the point isn't the money. The point is that they chose to treat me like a suspect over a routine errand, even though I was just following the rules they gave me. It felt like no matter what I did, I was already guilty in their eyes.
Yusuf Al-Farah is a Palestinian high school student from St. John, New Brunswick. His soundscape turns towards voice and what it costs to use it. It reflects on Palestine, on speaking out, and the emotional weight that comes with visibility and consequences.
Hello, everyone. Many people know me by the name of Yusuf Al-Farah. I'm 15, Palestinian, and proud of my heritage. The first time I felt I had to speak up was when my dad told me a story of his grandfather living through the Nakba, also known as the catastrophe when Palestinians lost their home in 1948. That story made me sad, but gave me a sense of duty to stand up for justice. I believe raising awareness matters, because occupying land without justification is wrong. Whether it's here or there or anywhere else in the world, it's still wrong. So I protest, protest rallies with multiple of people. Usually, on good days, we get over 40 to 50 people, but those are on good days. But even bad days themselves get around 20 to 30 people, which is still good. I also host events like Palestinian film festivals, Palestinian tatriz, which is also known as embroidery. Palestinian embroidery is beautiful. When you see it on a model, on anyone who is Palestinian in general wearing it, you'll see what I mean. It is the most beautiful type of embroidery I've ever seen. And I help people learn about Palestine's history and present. Last summer at the Multicultural Festival in St. John, I was at my Palestinian table that I decorated, I organized, and was full of Palestinian stuff. The Israeli table, a couple of tables away, came over and confronted us, saying we stole their land. And this was halfway through the international festival. And it was pretty obvious that in 1948 it was Palestinians who lost their homes. And they were basically embarrassing themselves, saying they were the ones who were the victims when they stole the land from us. Anyways, they called the cops on us. On me, really. And I got arrested for being peaceful. I was the only peaceful one there, and I was the one arrested. And even recently, I had to go to court just for that. Had to give them all my information just because I was standing up for Palestine, because I'm Palestinian and I'm proud. But when I share my voice, it's not just about me. It's about helping others understand the truth, the history, and why I care so deeply. People have to know the truth about Palestine. Thank you so much for listening, and that's it for today. Thank you.
Lenny Nguyen graduated from Mount Allison University with a Bachelor of Commerce. She's from Vietnam. Her soundscape examines a familiar stereotype, the assumption that Asian students are naturally good at maths. What appears at first to be a praise is slowly unpacked as a limitation, a narrowing of identity into expectation, and a reminder of how quickly people can be reduced to categories.
Walking through the hallway, trying to get a class between the noise and movement of everyone else. But people didn't know me well, just my name, maybe the classes I was in, but somehow people already had an idea who I was. You're from Vietnam, right? Yeah. So you must be really good at math. It usually came out casually, like it didn't need explanation. At first, I didn't react that much, but would smile, maybe nod, and move on. Because it wasn't said to be hurtful. It sounded like an assumption people made without thinking. But it kept happening. Different people, different conversation, same idea. You're Asian, you should be really good at math. Can you help me with this? Wait, do you know this? And over time, it started to feel repetitive. Not because of one comment, but because how often it appeared. People would ask for help before asking anyone else. Sometimes before I even said, I understood the question. And I would try. I would sit there, look at the problem, sometimes knowing the answer, but sometimes not. Because the truth was simple, math wasn't easy for me. But saying that out loud felt different. It felt like I was going to against what people already believe. So instead I stayed quiet. I kept trying. I learned at my own pace. Because it's strange how something sounds like a compliment can turn into something that you expect it to live up to.
Mike Ta is a commerce student from Vietnam currently studying at Mount Allison University. His soundscape focuses on a moment many international students recognize, being told their English is so good. The piece listens closely to that moment and to what sits underneath it. Expectation, surprise, and the quiet weight of not fully being seen beyond language.
Guys, it's me, Mike Ta, talking from the train station, and it's raining outside. So I've never really come across anything that's like racist to me in my life, but I remember this one time someone said it to me and I didn't think much of it. So we were just standing in a line, just making small talk, just in like a coffee shop, and then like the person in the line just like smiled at me and said, "Yeah, your English is very good for a Vietnamese student." I laughed and said thank you, but because like that's what you do, right? And I never really think much of it. But then it kept happening after different places, different people, same sentence, it just said a little differently. Wow, your English is so good. You don't even sound Vietnamese. Where did you learn to speak like that? Yeah, those are the kind of thing that people say to me. At first, it's just like I don't really think much of it. It's just harmless. I thought it's also they're being nice to me. Like when people were noticing me and appreciate it. But after a while, I started hearing not what they were saying, but what they meant. Because every time someone sounded surprised, it made me wonder what they expected. I learned English like everybody else in school with my friends. Through years of living in Canada, it's just like my life. But when they say your English is very good for Vietnamese, that's always a positive. A small pace when I realized they didn't expect me to sound like this. And suddenly I'm not just a student, I'm not just like a person in a conversation anymore. I'm something to be measured, compared, placed into category I didn't choose. And no matter how I speak, I'm still like for a Vietnamese kind of thing. It's a strange feeling to be complimented and reduced at the same time, because I don't need my voice to be impressive. I don't need it to be unexpected. I just need it to be heard. Yeah, so my name is Mike Tam. I'm from Vietnam. I live here in Canada, and yeah, this is just my voice. It's how I speak. Next time you hear it, listen to what's underneath.
Arunz Ndebisi is a commerce student at Mount Allison University. His soundscape moves through isolation and a connection, the experience of arriving as an international student and slowly building belonging through music, movement, and shared space. It is a story about how community is not found but formed.
My experience as an international student from Nigeria has been a story short of wonderful. I've had the pleasure to meet new people, to experience different culture, and to get to share my culture. When I first came to Canada as an international student from Nigeria, I was scared. I was afraid to socialize. I was afraid to feel rejected by this new community. I was afraid that people might not be the same as me. I might feel more like an outcast. But then, as days went by, I grew more confident in myself the more I met people. Like the first couple of days, I remember meeting new friends that I'm still friends with to this day. Years later, many new people I would consider my closest friend who were not from Nigeria, they were from all around. They were from India, they were from Canada, they were from Australia, and they were from the States. And then when I got to share things I liked, I felt this sense of accomplishment, seeing that I could have the same interest with these people and they could learn to appreciate and like my culture. Get to share my music has been one of the biggest ones for me, because to this day they listen to more music than I listen to from my country, believe it or not. My Indian friends play music from all over. My Australian friends know artists that I've never ever heard of from Nigeria. And that has made me feel this collective that has been able for them to experience my culture and appreciate it as much as I do. I've been able to experience their culture and appreciate it as much as they do. Unlike many others, I have had the pleasure of only meeting amazing people. Never have I experienced anything that made me feel not belonging. And that's why I decided to share my story, so people won't be afraid to meet people, socialize, and make friends, especially the first couple of weeks in Canada.
I love Nigerian music.
Tony Huynh is a recent graduate of Mount Allison University. His soundscape reflects on the collective experience of starting over in a new country, the uncertainty of people trying to shape a future in an unfamiliar ground.
I remember the application. It was simple. Resume, cover letter, a few clicks online. I had gone over it more than once before hitting submitting. Then I waited. A few days later, I got the email. Thank you for your interest. We regret to inform you. Nothing unusual. I've seen messages like that before. But this time, it stayed with me longer than usual. Because I kept thinking about my name at the top of the application. Tony Nguyen. And the last name that comes after it, a name that doesn't sound like where I'm applying or where I live. So I started to wonder who read it. what they saw first, what they assumed before reading anything else. Maybe they didn't notice. Or maybe they did. I'll never really know. So it made me think. You know, before you hear that notification, and then having the bad news of you didn't get selected, I just can't help to wonder about how much of a decision happens before a conversation even begins, before a phone call, before an interview, before a chance to speak for yourself. Just a name on a screen. I'm from Vietnam. And sometimes I wonder if my name is read differently before my work is ever seen. It's hard to prove something like that. There's no clear moment you can point to. No explanation that comes with it. Just silence. So you keep applying. You keep sending resume. You keep hoping the next one is different. Because that's what you can control. I don't know why I didn't get that job. But I do know this. A name shouldn't decide who gets a chance to be heard. And sometimes it feels like it does.
The final piece is from an anonymous contributor, a Bachelor of Science student in New Brunswick, who plays in competitive badminton team. Their soundscape reflects on a moment in sport where casual interaction shifted into something more difficult, shaped by cultural misunderstanding and racial tension. It speaks on how exclusion can surface, even in space meant for connection.
Hello, I'm an international student here at Mount Allison University, pursuing a degree in science. And also, I participated on a varsity sports team as well. And in my very first session as a rookie, I met one of the older veterans who was of white descent, Caucasian. He's from Winnipeg in like Canada, and he approached me and he was just giving me advice on like who all the other people on the team were and the relationship dynamics between one another. And being quite new to the team, I like looked up to him as a very influential figure, at least at the time, in that very moment, because as I said, it was my first session. But he went on to tell me a story of, like, randomly. I'd never asked him for it or anything. He randomly brought up this story of these black people, of what they were saying. And I don't mean to be, vulgar in my speech, but he mentioned that these black people, they we're speaking about these white people, and he straight up said, look at those white niggers walking over there. And I come from a country where not everyone is black, and we have a lot of like racial diversity. So when like people that aren't black say the N-word, I don't bat an eye towards it, because that's just how I've been conditioned my whole life. But I did not know what to expect from Canada after, because I thought this was like a normal thing, to the point where when I met to the team captain, I didn't even mention it to him after like maybe like 2 weeks later. And I asked him, I said, is it normal for white people to say the N-word here? And he said, no, that's not normal at all. Who said it? And I mentioned who it was. And he said, oh, that's strange. I'm sorry that happened. He was very apologetic about it. Honestly, in that moment, I just responded with, like, what? Like, out of confusion, and just laughed it off. But, I mean, after that, I just looked at him completely different. And I had, like, an expectation of, like, this is what I should expect from other white people and other people within Sackville. Like, maybe this is, like, a normal thing for them, but it was not. I've yet to hear someone say something like that to me in my time here. So, yeah, that's my story. I'm glad to share it. Thank you.
These are the 11 soundscapes, 11 ways of listening to the world and being heard within it. What connects them is not a single narrative, but a shared insistence to be more than assumption, more than stereotype, more than the moment someone misrecognized you. Across borders, classrooms, grocery stores, airports, and quiet everyday spaces, these stories reveal something simple and profound, that identity is not something fixed, but something lived, negotiated, and expressed. This project was created by racialized youth across New Brunswick between January and March 2026 with support from the NB Media Co-op and the funding from Canadian Race Relations. If you have listened this far, thank you. These are their stories, and now they are yours to carry forward.